Meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, this meeting is now being recorded. Great. I was going to let everybody know that we're just waiting on one or two more people who are meant to be on the call, so I'll just give it just another minute given the room change, and then we'll go ahead and begin. Thanks.
Thank you, Colin. Please let me know when you're ready to start, and I'll start the recording. It's on pause at the moment. Thank you.
Okay, Mike, are you here? Are we ready to go?
Here and ready to go.
Okay, great. I think that we're waiting on maybe one more person, but maybe we can go ahead and kick things off. And then.
Yep.
Ah, okay. What? Great. Good to have you. All right. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, everyone. And welcome to the September 2018 meeting of the Cross Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights. I am Colin Curry, and I'm here with my co-chair, Michael Kara Nicholas. And we've got a relatively loose agenda today. The last time that we met, we overpacked the agenda and didn't leave quite as much time for community feedback and for exchanges amongst the participants. So we've tried to make this agenda a bit more breathable so that we can all get a chance to point to anything that we need to be focusing on and have our voices heard as we go into the planning for the next ICANN meeting in Barcelona in October. Have I missed anything in that introduction, Mike?
I think that's everything. Should we kick that off with the first item on the agenda?
Sure, that sounds great. Okay, so as you are probably aware, the CCWP HR was involved in a human rights mapping program over the past couple years. That was actually a part of work stream one of the cross-community working group on ICANN's, on enhancing ICANN's accountability. And actually, I was not a part, an active part of the ICANN community at that point, and we were unable to find, make contact with the people who are more directly involved in this activity. I see that Niels is on the line, so please feel free to correct me or to chime in if you would like to speak to that activity, because afterwards we're going to talk a little bit about how this type of work is evolving. Were you involved in the mapping program?
Yeah, I think I did a significant part of it.
Okay, would you mind giving us a little, just an overview of what that consisted of? And then I will paste a link to my favorite image in the chat, which is the beautiful infographic that it produced.
Yeah. So what we did is that we went to different communities and went through, I think, what is called a speculative process, where we tried to get a speculative explorative process. We tried to, both from the practices, looking at the practices in ICANN and looking at the list of human rights, trying to think where there could be connected with both.
Sorry, Niels, could you get a little bit closer to your mic? We're having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, does it work better like this? I can also put up the volume like this. Does it work better?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. So we engage in a speculative, explorative approach, and we try to understand ICANN's processes and themes, and also take the list of all human rights treaties and principles and enumerate them and see, looking from both angles, where we could see an interaction between those two fields. Then we tried to also ask people, where do they think, in which part of ICANN's work there might be human rights implications? And when we then came up with an initial assessment, we tried to verify that both on this list and in the community to see where that made sense. And then iteratively, people mentioned new points when we started socializing this graph, and then we amended it a bit more. So I think with this, we've been trying to map and visualize for ourselves where there might be connections without being fully exhaustive. So this was definitely the explorative process, which I think then really helped later more formal processes to understand which grounds we could and should cover.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, that is really useful. Thank you so much. And it is my understanding that one of the main outcomes of this really important work was contextualizing, or was enhancing the understanding of ICANN as not only a technical organization, but also a body that has influence on human rights. So it went a long way in kind of building up that understanding. So now what we've continued to do with the ongoing work of the CCWP is to come at this from another angle, now that human rights has carved out a toehold within the ICANN community, and we succeeded in, I won't belabor the history, but having the core value added to the bylaws and then getting the framework of interpretation approved. We're continuing to flesh out this relationship between ICANN policies and human rights, but from a different angle. And this is the Human Rights and Policy Development Processes paper that we've presented, that has been presented previously in meetings of the CCWP. I'm really happy to report that it is in final stages, and then maybe I can turn it over to Vidushi to give us a little, maybe an update. And again, I will paste a link links in the chat to the documents that are being referenced. Vidushi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Colin. I think the best way to give an update to this is basically talk about where we left off. So the last time that we discussed the paper, a lot of fantastic feedback was given to us by a couple of CDP chairs who thought that maybe, you know, we could be more granular or more accurate in how we think about human rights with respect to PDPs. And when we got back to the drawing board after that kind of feedback, what we found was that even though we know PDPs have human rights impacts, we want to know exactly, you know, which work track and which subgroup within the PDP is actually looking at a particular right or has implications for particular rights, because that is actually what a newcomer or somebody interested in human rights wants to know. And so what we've done with this version is really kind of tease out exactly the inner workings of each PDP, so to speak. So we've looked at you know, particular work streams, we looked at particular groups, we've looked at, you know, if some groups are having trouble taking, not having trouble, but rather if some groups have, you know, been paused at this time, so sort of having like a really granular focus on human rights and the different policy development processes. And I think the biggest difference between the last version that folks would have seen and this one is that it's written really very much like a primer. So if you're, I mean, I think the previous version was more of like a briefing document, like a mapping document, but this is more like, you know, explaining the basics to somebody who's interested in ICANN but doesn't know how to get involved. And I think at this point, I assume you shared the link on chat, Colin. At this point, what we're really looking for and what would be really useful would be to have, A, the PDP chairs look at their particular section and, you know, tell us if we've missed something or if there's something that we should add. And also for people who are interested in this space to tell us what else they need to know. Because as all of us working in ICANN know, there's a lot of information, and one of the main sort of challenges we had is, like, what do you leave out at the cost of being accessible? So those two pieces of feedback would be really great at this point. Thanks.
Thanks, Fidishi, for that overview. And I just want to underscore the that the contextualization of this paper as a primer. So it's quite interesting because not only is this building on the work of Workstream 1 and all of the efforts to really tease out the links between concrete human rights and concrete ICANN policies, we've kind of flipped this analysis a bit and gone from, okay, these ongoing processes, what are happening in these ongoing processes, what is the stage, what are the resources that you need to have on hand to be able to understand and subsequently engage in these different policy development processes, and then being able to further tease that out and say, these are the parts that might be potentially problematic in terms of human rights, or these are the issues that we should be focusing on as ICANN community members who are interested in or, you know, proponents of human rights. So I just wanted to underscore those two elements, and then maybe this will also speak to the persistent problem of getting more people involved, getting more people engaged. So we have shared this document previously, and it's been put in a PDF in this later version, although I also submitted an editable version of the text as well in the chat. So I would encourage you, if you have any, if you have some time to look over and leave feedback on this final version, then please do. Our intention is to go ahead and share the final version of this paper, not only in the CCWP, but also in other stakeholder groups, or perhaps with the incoming fellowship cohort, to be able to allow the maximum number of people to make use of this primer and to make use of this groundwork that we've done. I realize we haven't had very much time to review, but does anybody have any comments or on the utility of this kind of approach, or any feedback on the paper as it's been presented? Yes, David, please come in.
Thanks, Colin. Hello, everyone. This is David McCauley for the record. And as I've done in the past, I'd like to, again, thank Fidushi for the work that's gone on this. And I've looked at it. I haven't looked at it recently, but I would note that there are three PDPs underway that conceivably could touch on human rights. One is on subsequent procedures for new GTLDs. Another, and in that, I'm not a participant in that, although I am a participant in what they call Work Track 5, which deals with geonames. The next would be the Rights Protection Mechanisms PDP Working Group. I am a participant in that. And that deals with RPMs that have been implemented as part of the applicant guidebook. And it deals with things like URS, UDRP, trademark clearinghouse, et cetera. And so, you know, that could touch on human rights. And then the third is the currently underway expedited policy development process to try and bring the temporary specification forward as consensus policy, and I think that's an expedited one. That is my understanding, and I'm not part of that group, that they have until next May to try and do that. And since that is trying to bring the GDPR related considerations into the WHOIS process, conceivably that could touch on human rights. The one suggestion I would have is, as we approach this document, we might want to think of creating a document light. In other words, a more focused document that encapsulates a lot of what's in it, but is intended for those PDPs that are underway. And it sort of brings up something I've said before and I think is quite important, and that is, with PDPs that are underway, I think it's important that if the human rights considerations are going to be raised, they should be raised in the nature of impact assessment or things like that. They should be raised as early as possible, because these groups are moving on and will be forming recommendations, etc. And I think it's only fair to let them know as early as possible if this group or any other group thinks that this is something that they need to consider. Thanks very much.
Colin, can I just quickly jump in with a couple of comments? Sorry, I'm not on the chat, so I don't know if there's somebody else online.
No, that's fine. Go ahead, Satishi.
Okay, so thanks, David. As always, your feedback is very, very constructive and, actionable, so I'm very appreciative of that. I just wanted to get your thoughts on, so you mentioned two PDPs. You mentioned subsequent procedures and RPMs. They're both in the document, and I think at this point what they're really missing is sort of an insider looking out sort of view. If you have the chance to go through the document, I think what would be great would be to hear from you as to what other key issues newcomers should be aware of, or people looking to get involved should be aware of. I take your point about, making this work more visible to particular groups so that they know, that we're looking at it and there are opportunities for collaboration, but also, what does the group want to convey? I think it's useful to think of this document as sort of like, for lack of a better term, like an elevator pitch for each PDP. And so your input would be very, very welcome on that. Thanks.
Colin, it's David. If I could make one more comment.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thanks, Padushi, and good suggestion, and I will try and do that. I have to note that I'm on some special projects right now, and so my calendar is very full, but I will try and do that and try and get back to this group within the next week or two. It's probably the best time I can promise on something like that. But it's a good idea, and I will take it to heart and try and do something. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
And then I wanted to chime in on the third PDP that you had mentioned, David, very rightfully so, which was the ePDP. Of course, human rights are ever present in the conversation of the ePDP, given that GDPR is rooted in privacy protection and data minimization and these kinds of principles that can ultimately be traced back to human rights, to the European Declaration of Human Rights and other kind of foundational documents. That being said, as someone who is very involved, spending a lot of time on the ePDP at present, it doesn't necessarily mean that human rights are always in consideration in a positive way, or that they are always taken seriously. So we definitely need some more work on that, and some more input from the cross community participants that have interest in human rights. It's not limited to non-commercial users. However, the ePDP was not focused or does not feature as prominently in this primer per se, for three main reasons, because it is outside of the norm. It is an exception to the rule of the GNSO policy development process, in that it does have a very constrained timeline, and then it also has restricted membership that was by nomination and selection and appointment. And then it was also unique in that it has it includes representation from different advisory committees, which is quite unusual, because generally advisory committees only engage at the point at which the working group has already done the preliminary work and has put it out for comment. So these reasons for why the EPDP is exceptional and not focused on in the same way in the paper are outlined at the bottom of the paper. But I agree that given the clear relationship, maybe having a special light version or even just kind of a one-pager that looks at the key human rights issues and that process in particular could be useful. So I will note that as a potential work item moving forward. Okay, if we don't have any other thoughts or comments on the Human Rights and PDP's paper, perhaps we can move on to the next agenda item. Going once, going twice. Okay, so the next thing that we're going to be talking about is the GNSO PDP 3.0. And to give you some context, we're looking at this from the vantage point of the CCWP, obviously. And one of our main goals in the wake of the CCWG work on enhancing ICANN's accountability and developing the framework of interpretation for the human rights bylaw is considering ways that this bylaw can be operationalized, ways that it can percolate down into the community and ultimately be reflected and supported in the different decision-making processes or policy development processes of the different parts of the community. So I see that we actually have a couple GNSO counselors on this call, so I might pick on you guys to maybe give us a bit of an overview on the PDP 3.0 discussion. Rafiq or Stephanie, would you be able to do that?
Okay. Hi, this is Rafiq speaking. So just to be sure, Colin, you are asking about introducing the paper or
apologies. Maybe if you could just give, I'm sure that there are some people in the group who are not following the GNSO Council proceedings as closely as maybe we could be. So could you just tell us what the GNSO PDP 3.0 is all about? And then I'd be happy to chime in after and kind of tie it back into the work that we're doing. But if you could give us a brief overview about what is the PDP 3.0 and at what stage are we right now?
Okay, thanks. So maybe in terms of context, Paul starts that in the GNSO Council digital planning meeting that we had early this year in LA, and the Council spent time to discuss about how we can make to recognizing all the issues for several PDP in terms of timeline being effective and if they are functioning as expected and so on. So we started that effort also based on staff paper.
I mean, the GMSO policy staff prepared the paper from their perspective, trying to identify several issues they are observing in several PDP working group and trying to initiate a discussion. So we used that, and the council agreed that we need to start this, what we call the PDP 3.0 process. So what we did is that in San Juan, the GNSO Council modified its usual schedule in Sunday working session, with allocating a whole morning to discuss about those issues and to get input from the community, asking the leadership of all PDP working group to share their thoughts and what are the issues they see from their side. So based on that input and on the staff paper, we created the PDP 3.0 paper. If I recall, it was in April, and we put it for input from the stakeholder group and constituency. And also we asked, again, working group leadership to review it. So, as unfortunately, the council was shifted its attention to the EPDP, and it was, I think, the same for all groups. We had to extend the call for input till August, and we got several regarding that paper. So, just to clarify what the remit of this this paper or effort is, really about the effectiveness of PDP, and we identified several area for improvement. It's really about how working groups are functioning. So it's not about the PDP per se, but it's really about working group and also the council itself. So we identified, for example, working group dynamics to ensure that when people or members joining the working group to participate in good faith and ensure that we create the environment for that. And also with regard to the working group leadership, because we recognize there is much more expectation from the chair or the working group leadership in general in term of work and so on. So we try to also to, and I think one of the issues is regarding the consensus call or designation. And this is was the case in some working groups lately. It's people challenge the consensus designation from the chair. Again, it's also about the consensus stability. The other front, it was really about the role of the council as the manager of the PDP. Because I think we recognize that when we started the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group, the subsequent procedure working group, and the RDS working group, we had like three heavy working group at the same time with huge expectation and a lot of goals to achieve, and we are seeing issues in terms of timeline, the workload and so on. So we are trying from the council how we can improve that in terms to maybe to give much more realistic scope for working group, and also that we monitor more closely the work plan, and also to manage the resource, having a better reporting or update from the PDD that can be used for the management. So as you could see, it's really about how to make working group function better. What are the areas that we can do to improve the working group model we have? It's possible by the GNS operating procedure to have a different format or structure if needed. And that's what you, I mean, the EPDP itself, it's one of the examples how we did that. So we move it from what we did before and created this small team, recognizes the previous issues and trying to set the condition for success. So we'll see if this is really effective or not. So this is what I hope that was clear, and it's not easy to summarize all the recommendations, but it's really about the working group, but not the PDP as a process on itself. Thanks.
Great. That was really helpful. Thank you so much, Rafiq. So two things that caught my eye as I was looking over the PDP 3.0. Originally, I was thinking that it might be something like a restructuring, and we might be able to put in, include a more human rights considerative step in the process. But I realized, as you say, that this is more about the construction and the kind of the interactions between working group members. That being said, I wonder if I could pose a question to you and the group more broadly. Do you think that as the cross-community working group on enhancing ICANN accountability recommendations are edging ever closer to being approved, do you think that there could be some sort of synergy between a revision of GNSO operating procedures that could perhaps work in coordination with a CCWG implementation team to consider ways that we might be able to work towards enhancing the effectiveness of the GNSO PDPs while simultaneously trying to contemplate implementing Workstream 2 recommendations?
Okay, thanks, Colin. So, yeah, I mean, as you saw that the PDP 3 is about effectiveness, but my interpretation of what it's suggested here and on operationalizing in particular. Or implementing the CCWG recommendation, it's really about amending the GNSO operating procedure. And it's the question here is to identify in which stage to do so. So, for example, we had a discussion in the GNSO Council with regard to one working group, and there was a question why we didn't have a policy impact assessment, so which I think is quite similar to the other impact assessment that you have in mind. So that can happen if we, for example, at the GNSO, we implement, we amend the operating procedure to add a checklist or a condition that during the drafting of PDP charter, the working group should do the human rights impact assessment, for example. So that something means, for example, maybe adding, amending the template, adding the checklist, and so on. And usually this task is done, handled or delegated by the Genesis Council, for example, to the staff who do the groundwork, or like what happened for the case of the bylaw change, it was a drafting team, including counselor and those outside the council, to identify what are the areas that in the operating procedure that needs to or the section that needs to be changed. So in terms of synergy, it's hard to say how it can work, because usually for this kind of work, the Genesis Council will decide either the team of counselor or a drafting team that includes members from the stakeholder group and constituency. So I think that will be the usual path if we have to implement the CCWG recommendation. But just kind of caveat, we didn't have any discussion yet at the council level. We have the CCWG recommendation to be approved in our next meeting next week. So, as we are, GNSO is a charting organization, but after that, when the board approve, probably it will come to us again, and the GNSO Council has to plan for that activity and put it in its long to-do list. So, maybe it's possible to give input, but at this stage it's really hard to state how it will take form. Sorry, it was quite long, but just try to explain how usually things are done.
Yeah, thanks for that. To put a bee in your bonnet, as these discussions progress, one opportunity that I thought that I spotted could be as the GNSO considers alternates to the working group model, such as the EPDP, which personally I'm not sure if it's good for the human rights of the participants, given the amount of time and effort it takes. A joke. But if you, for example, if working groups will be constructed to in a purposeful manner to ensure expertise and objectivity, perhaps we could be looking at, in addition to the dimensions of different stakeholder groups and different constituencies, perhaps we could be looking towards including, ensuring that subject matter experts are included in such discussions, such as not just human rights experts, but maybe data protection experts or people who are skilled at carrying out different types of impact assessments, privacy impact assessments, data protection impact assessments, et cetera. So I would see that as perhaps being in line with the spirit of the human rights core value. So that's a potential way that this could maybe be seen as killing one bird or two birds with one stone. Do we have any other comments or thoughts on the GNSO PDP 3.0? Yes, Rafiq, come on in. Or was that an old hand?
Colin?
Yes.
No, and no need to kill birds. You can do things. So maybe just a clarification. In fact, the existing GNSO operating procedure to have a different type of structure, drafting team, expert group, task force, and so on. And the choice usually is made during the drafting, charter drafting. So it depends. But, I mean, now we have the working group model since the previous
GMSO review, which happened 2007-2008. And so this is kind of, there is now, we are assessing the impact and the issues. So with regard to bringing expertise, it's already possible. If you check, for example, the EPDP charter, there are provision allowing to bring independent experts and so on. So it's always a question here how the working group or teams to leverage and use that. So it can be possible that in future when you have any new PDP to be initiated, it's just important to ensure that the drafting in drafting the charter to add this provision about bringing expertise or identifying subject matter and so on. So while the charter template is quite standard, there are some standard language there, like with regard to membership, consensus, designation, and so on, coming from the GNS operating procedure. It's possible to add more with regard to bringing expertise or identifying the domain that need to be filled by subject matters and so on. So it just need to be ensured that it's done during the scoping discussion.
Thank you, Afiq. Do we have any other comments from participants on the GNSO PDP 3.0 and how it may be articulated with the CCWG recommendations? Okay, I think we can go ahead and move on to our next agenda item then. And for that, I'll turn it over to my co-chair, Michael Karanikolas. Mike, come on in.
Thanks so much for that and for that very interesting discussion. So the next item that we have on the agenda is the recent domain tools decision. Some of you may be familiar with it, may have seen the buzz around about the decision, but just to reiterate, there was a preliminary injunction issued a few days ago in favor of the domain name commission, which is .nz, against domain tools in order to stop domain tools from using its users, the .nz users' data, continuing to scrape their information or to return .nz data in terms of the searches that are made into domain tools' database. The grounds for this were that the use of that information and the processing of that information is a violation of its terms of service, and underlying that is the idea that domain tools is work in this area is a violation of the privacy of the .nz users. Now, I should point out that this was just a preliminary injunction that was issued, and it's not a final decision. But in this case, to get that injunction, there was a relatively strong legal burden. Specifically, it was a requirement that Domain Name Commission would have had to determine that the law and facts were clearly in its favor. So even though there's just been a preliminary injunction issued, this is probably pretty telling about where this case is likely to end up. So given the buzz around this case, given the interest in it, and given the potential relevance to questions about enforcement of users' rights, and particularly internationally and cross-strait, I thought it might be useful to tee up a conversation to kind of raise the issue and see if people might be interested in chatting about, you know, the implications of this case about enforcement of rights, and also going forward about if anybody has thoughts about how privacy as a right is going to be balanced in future cases. And this is, I think, very relevant to what we're doing at the Cross Community Working Party. This case in particular is about balancing privacy against commercial value, which is maybe an easier determination, but going forward, we're going to have to think carefully about balancing between privacy and security, where access to this data is important to crack down on phishing, crack down on malware, and then more broadly, privacy versus access to information, where there's a transparency interest in sometimes knowing this underlying data. So with that as sort of a brief of introduction to the case, I was hoping to sort of tee this off to the group and see if there's any thoughts about this case and where it's heading, or what it might say towards the balance of human rights issues that we may be dealing with in the coming years. I see some typing, and I see Colin with her hand up. So, Colin, do you want to jump in? The discussion could take a great deal of time. Yes, that's a fair point. And obviously the call is wrapping up at, in 13 minutes. So I don't think we're looking to fully flesh out this case, just maybe if anybody has some thoughts that they want to share about the idea. Stephanie? You may be muted, Stephanie. In fact, it looks like you are muted.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear. Welcome.
Wonderful. I would agree this is just a preliminary case, this New Zealand case. However, there are plenty of other instances in the CCWG space where they have restrictions and Domain Tools has been ignoring it. Now, that also applies to the GTLDs, and it's clear in the 2013 RAA that they are not supposed to be doing the kind of scraping they're doing. The registrars have complained about it, but nobody's bothered to do anything about it. I think ICANN, as data controller, is or ought to be on the hook because they're not enforcing any of the restrictions on scraping. So I think it'll be an interesting case, particularly if somebody files some amicus briefs. But I don't see much action on that front, and I'd love to know what this is the first call I've tuned in on in a long time. I'd love to know what folks feel about filing amicus briefs on these cases. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it does raise an interesting issue. I think that for this case in particular, so, you know, this is not, I wouldn't see this call as part of an advocacy process in support of in support of a particular side in this proceeding, but rather to kind of flesh out the implications for ICANN itself. But I do think that the idea that this has been a recurring problem does, I think, raise really interesting issues about ICANN's role in this and potentially in enforcement. And I see a couple of hands going up now. So, or I see Colin with a hand up. So, Colin, do you want to jump in? Colin no longer has a hand up. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. No, I'm just fiddling around with mute over here. I just wanted to point out that I also find the notion of amicus brief quite interesting, to see how this will continue to influence or how other contracted parties, registries, or registrars might digest this ruling. But I will say that in terms of applicable law and applicable legal frameworks, this did come up in the EPDP in the context of our conversations, at least our internal conversations about that. And it is quite interesting because it speaks to the role of ICANN in enforcing contractual obligations or permitting access. And it, this kind of is what ties it back into ICANN, the ICANN community, and draws it really front and center into what we're trying to do, what kinds of, tiered access models or technical specifications are in the pipeline. So I think that moving forward, we can keep these kinds of evolving jurisprudence, evolving case law front and center as we're considering not only Workstream 2 recommendations, but kind of ICANN's evolving role as a standard-setting body, and what the kinds of obligations that it does or does not put onto its contracted parties. My two cents.
And David McCauley has asked in the chat whether we have any members from ESF, EPIC, or CDT. We don't have anybody from CDT. I'm not sure if Mitch Stoltz is usually the point person from EFF at ICANN. I'm not sure if he's a member of the CCWP. I don't think I've seen him here before. And I don't think we have anybody from EPIC here either. We do have people from Article 19, which sometimes does, including my co-chair, of course, which sometimes does amicus briefs. But I'm not sure if we want to go too far down the route of individual advocacy strategies, and I do think we should try to keep the discussion focused on the implications for ICANN as an organization. And to that effect, Stephanie's put in the chat that ICANN is the data controller, and it cannot selectively enforce commercial rights and ignore registrants' rights. I think the implications, if an organization like Domain Tools is consistently flouting the law, and the policy implications of that, and what ICANN's responsibility, not only what ICANN's responsibility might be, but also whether it's in their interest to try and enforce these rules more clearly. I think that's definitely a very potentially fruitful area to look at in terms of the human rights implications of this issue. And this is a really interesting area to dig into, but we've had a request from staff to wrap up very sharply at 10 to make sure that the next call can go ahead on time. So unless there's any further points, maybe we should move on to some discussion about ICANN63. I see my co-chair has her hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to suggest that maybe in the interest of engaging, we could, kick this discussion to the list, and then we could actually even kick the discussion of topics for ICANN 63 to the list to be able to give people ample time to reflect and comment. Maybe what we could do is just skip over to the last agenda item to make sure that we're not leaving anybody with any kind of burning comments that they want to express to the group, and if not, then we can jump back to planning for ICANN 63. So I can see that Mike agrees with that approach. So I'd like to open the floor for these next 5 minutes and just ask participants, in terms of ICANN and human rights, it's a pretty wide focus. Is there anything in your work or in your studies or in your engagement with ICANN that you might want to flag to us as things that the group should be aware of, should be looking into? Things that are interesting. OK, Okay, it doesn't look like it. So I will go ahead and. Sorry.
Oh, never mind. Just a refer. When you were moving it on, I was seeing typing in the chat.
Okay.
But that was harkening back to a previous issue.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I will toss this to the list, this topic to the list, but just to give you guys an idea of things that are kind of cooking in terms of the ICANN 63 session, which has been scheduled for Monday morning, great time slot. We'll have a nice little cozy room as we did in San Juan. So the things that we're looking at, ICANN org is finally wrapping up its HRIA and will be in a position to share preliminary findings by ICANN 63. So we have been in contact with staff, and they are planning to attend and give us the lowdown on what happened with the process and outcome of ICANN's human rights impact assessment. Hopefully this will be able to lead into a conversation about community-led human rights impact assessments or other kinds of human rights considerations. So that will be the main feature of the session at ICANN 63 in Barcelona. Other things that we could have on the agenda include updates from the EPDP or other PDPs, like the three that were identified, subsequent procedures, rights protection mechanisms, or EPDP that can affect human rights. And perhaps a bit more on due diligence and how not only a structural inclusion such as a checklist or an HRIA could be added to ICANN processes, but how we could maybe from the bottom up be infusing more human rights considerations into the process ourselves, whether that's better communication amongst stakeholder groups or better coordination amongst members, human rights interested members active in the PDP. Those are other things that we could potentially explore in our face-to-face session. Just as a quick poll, if you are planning to attend ICANN Barcelona, could you please indicate so with a green tick in next to your name?
I will be attending Colin. I'm on the audio bridge, so consider this my metaphorical green tick.
Great. Thank you, Radishi. All right, we've got quite a few folks. Okay, great. I just wanted to have a quick straw poll. All right, so I think that in the interest of wrapping up on time, I will go ahead and kick these and other discussions to the list, which has been suffering. I personally have been buried in EPDP, but we'll make a conscientious effort to keep you guys, to keep the list active, and I hope to hear your thoughts on not only planning for ICANN 63, but ongoing events both within and beyond the ICANN community that have a potential to impact human rights. Anything to add, Mike?
No, I think that's a great avenue forward, and I think this has been a really interesting discussion. And I'm glad we were able to have this. And I look forward to further conversations in Barcelona.
All right, thank you, Mariam. We can stop the recording. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, everyone, for attending.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everyone.